SMQBs episode 208. Nothing much happening in the sports world this week, eh, fellas?
Nah.
Nothing much at all. Well,
Hardly
let's jump
watched
into
television
it.
all weekend.
Yeah, right. I know. Well, I won't say where I spent part of my Sunday.
How are your bank accounts doing?
Good. Well, milk.
Mine's better.
Not for Nace's terrible picks. Much better.
Yeah, right.
Mine's
who
much
are you
better
putting in the
after
bar?
betting with milk.
Oh.
What'd you do? Did you do the opposite of milk?
No. He gave me points on the UConn game.
Yeah, that's right.
The corner. I had to do it.
We'll start with House. House, who are you bringing to the bar this week?
I am bringing someone that's unlikely to be known to most people unless you're following wrestling, but it's a great story. Wyatt Hendrickson. He is a current lieutenant in the Air Force, and for years he was one of the top heavyweights for NCAA wrestling. And now he's taken a graduate year at Oklahoma State. And this past weekend was the championships in Philadelphia. And there was to be a coronation, one of the final matches of Gable Stevenson, who's one of the all-time great heavyweights in American history. He won a gold medal for the United States. And so Gable was just going to come in and steamroll over Wyatt Hendrickson. And in what many consider one of the greatest upsets in really college wrestling history, Wyatt Hendrickson upset him in the very last second. So it was remarkable. It was fun. He's a good guy. He's serving our country. And although he's still in training and serving our country, he could probably take time out for a drink. So I'm going to have Wyatt, anything you want on me at the bar, buddy. That was fun.
All right. Rooster?
Well, I'm going to eat a little crow, and I'm going to take Dan Hurley to the bar. I am going to give him a little talking to about behaving like a grown-up when you're coaching
Rooster,
a chalk team like UConn.
The punchable face segment is later in the show.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I think he handled the post-game interview after losing to Florida by 2 points very well. He was all choked up talking about how much he respected the Gators and how much he loved his team. But then he acted like an ass on the way back to the locker room. And it's just a bad look for the program. I hope they straighten him out.
Milk, what do you got?
I was going to take Hurley to the bar or punch him. I wasn't really sure. But I will pull an audible, and I'm going to take my boy Walter Clayton for the Florida Gators. Without him, we would not be in the Sweet 16. Gators, UConn had us on the ropes big time yesterday, and he came up with some clutch three-pointers. I want to take him to the bar, give him a drink. I think he's of drinking age. And next up is Maryland. And for Nick Verderami, who's been shit-talking all day and sending me text messages, we are ready for you.
Milk, age doesn't matter. Just ask your head coach.
Yeah. Milk.
What do you mean, Rooster? What are you talking about?
Milk, you need to steamroll Maryland. Please just steamroll the twerps.
You should see some of the texts I'm getting. It's unbelievable.
All right. Well, I might have to bring Pope to the bar because he seems to have been left out. We're not sure what happened to Pope, but he's not in the waiting room or anything. So maybe I need to bring him to the bar. I'm conflicted on the bar this week. So I just got to mention, because I just saw this, Bob Carpenter has been the radio announcer for 20 years with the Nats. And he announced that this will be his last season. So he deserves a drink. That's pretty cool. It's the 20th season of Nats baseball in D.C. And this will be his last season as the broadcaster. So I got to take him to the bar. But I also have to mention this somewhere here. Alex Palou has won the first two Indy races of the season back to back. And that's pretty cool, deserving of a drink. But you know who came in second and third were the two McLaren drivers. And on the heels of first and second in Shanghai for McLaren, I mean, Zach Brown deserves a drink. I don't like that guy, and I don't really love the team, but that's pretty impressive what McLaren Racing is doing right now. So they definitely deserve a glass of something on me. So, Pope, you're back. Who are you bringing to the bar?
I'm going to take Bubba Cunningham and apologize to him for the way that he was castigated last week on this pod.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. You're kind of
really
kidding us.
I'm not kidding.
I think the way the team played sort of justified the crucifixion that House gave them.
Well, no, I mean, they were deserving 11 seed. I mean, clearly the first game they blew out San Diego State to earn the 11th seed. But beyond that, Bubba's got a lot of questions about the team that we'll be looking forward, not backwards, as we come up on 2025. 25-26. A lot of questions on roster construction, things like that. And I just want to pick his brain and for how you got 14 SEC teams in and all that kind of stuff. I think it'd be a fascinating conversation.
All right. Well, that's the bar scene this week. So see you guys there. Rooster, how do we get to do this show?
Well, yeah, let me talk to you about our sponsor, Digital Law Marketing. This is a unique law firm marketing company that works exclusively with one law firm per geographic area, which is, I say unique because there are a lot of them out there that you sign up with them and the next thing you know, one of your competitors is using them and you're wondering, where's their loyalty? That's not the case with Digital Law Marketing. You hire them and they're working only for you in your region. They are an outstanding company, as I can attest, and so can Bison. We have gotten great results, and they're known for exclusivity and results. If you want to improve your digital law marketing or improve your marketing game, go to digitallawmarketing.com.
And they're just, in addition to being, you know, just great at everything they do and loyal, they're really great people too. I mean, they get to know you as a person too. And so I think that's one of the reasons they're so successful is they're just good people.
Website too, right?
Yeah, they're going to do the SMQB's website. So be on the lookout for that in the future.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's jump into it. March Madness is fully underway. House, what did we learn in the first weekend?
We learned that NIL and the transfer portal is definitely working for the Blue Bloods. If that's what you wanted in this tournament, that's what you got. We're down to four conferences. We're down to the SEC, the Big 12, the Big 10, the ACC. Nobody else. We're down to no seed that's lower than number 10. There will be no Cinderella this year. So I don't know. I think a lot of us, when we watch the March Madness, we always want that potential Cinderella story. I don't think there's, I mean, even if you take the lowest seed remaining, Arkansas, it's hard to call an SEC team coached by John Calipari a Cinderella.
Right.
So I guess this one is for the Blue Bloods. I mean, this is a battle royale here. It was a fun weekend. I thought overall it was relatively lackluster. We had a single buzzer beater, as everyone knows, in the Maryland game. The Florida UConn, the BYU Wisconsin games were close, but most of the other ones, it was just higher seed running roughshod over lower seed, especially once we got into the round of 32. What we do have to look forward to is some pretty good matchups upcoming. I just don't think anyone is taking its opponent easy. We talked about this in the preview, how good a matchup would be like something like BYU-Alabama. I think will be a great game. BYU should not be taken lightly by anyone. I don't think Florida's taken Maryland lightly at all. Florida just, they have a tough go at it. They really will have a tough go. If they make it all the way through, they will no doubt about it have earned it. And I think everybody's surprised by what we're seeing. Bison joked about last week about how many times Arizona has let us down in our brackets, but Caleb Love is back for some revenge. Well, actually not revenge. He's back for a round two, I should say.
Second helping.
Yeah, a second helping, not revenge. He's back for just to do it with another team. He had his glory with North Carolina against Duke, and now he wants to do it with Arizona. He was a biggest factor in that Oregon game, which they came storming back from. It's fun to watch some of the coaching stories. Obviously, the Calipari story at Arkansas is a good one. I don't know about you guys. I just found that shocking, the St. John's. They just did not show up. I think it's well known by now that Patino made a conscious decision to sit down their best player because he just wasn't distributing the ball. He wasn't playing the way he coaches St. John's basketball, and he made a really ballsy decision to put team above an individual. It's hard to know whether or not it costs him the game, whether he would have ever found his rhythm, but that was a big, big, big time decision on a big stage. So, you know, you got between Bruce Pearl and a fun story and Mark Pope taking his first time round in Kentucky.
Yeah, that'll be a fun game. Kentucky,
that's
Tennessee.
A really fun SEC brawl
going on there. Third time's a charm for Rocky Top.
I've got a question about something you said, House, about the transfer portal being good to the Blue Bloods. I'd be really curious to know how many players transferred within their conference, because you've got all these SEC teams in there. And I'm curious as to whether the talent is going into a conference, and then when they transfer, they're distributing to teams that are in the same conference, but maybe historically haven't been the basketball blue blood. In other words, I mean, is that how you end up with so many SEC teams in the Sweet 16, is that they're getting the best talent, and then through transfers, they're just, yeah, because they've got the most money. That's right.
Right.
I mean, it's definitely a money issue. Yeah. Okay. So that,
I mean, Carolina didn't go far this year because they didn't have a big man. They lost all of their potential big men to SEC programs like Alabama. Got the one guy that Rutgers transferred that they thought they were going to get, but Alabama outbid them. So even the blue blood programs are going to have to pivot now to compete with the juggernauts in the SEC and the Big Ten, who have a lot of money at their disposal. And, you know, they're putting together these super teams.
Kentucky's entire team, pretty much all their lead players are made from transfers.
They had 0 points coming back from last year. That's unbelievable.
But the story really, though, is if you're a small-time team that lucks into a player who, say, just wasn't developed by when he was a freshman in college, you know, grew a little bit more, got a better game, went to JUCO maybe for a year, came to your team, you can't hold that guy anymore. That person's gone after one good year and going for the money. Those teams are never going to, you know, the good teams like the Gales a couple of years ago when Pitino was the coach, they had five seniors. Remember that? They had five senior starters. They'll never have a team like that again for a school like that.
St. Peter's, all those good ones.
I'm just expediting the inevitable here, because in ultimately when you get down to the Final Four and usually the Elite Eight, it's the same teams, right? I mean,
not always, maybe, though.
Okay. Occasionally you'll have a George Mason, whoever it was, that made the Final Four.
I think we're going to, like, to Pope's point, though, I think we're going to start seeing teams like Gonzaga drop back because they can't compete financially.
Well, look at the Big East. I mean, you know, the Big East is historically one of the most, if not the most important basketball conference in the history of college basketball. But they're not a football conference, right? They don't have the money. They don't have the money flowing into the programs. So is that going to take a school like Villanova that had so much success? Are they going to just not be able to compete? I mean, we can talk about Villanova for different reasons, but just by example, I mean, it's a small school. It's not a football school. Are they going to not be able to compete with the money?
Well, what about UConn? I mean, is Hurley going to, in this new paradigm, is Hurley going to be able to compete? Is he going to be able to get the same kind of players?
Well, maybe not.
There were some mainstays from the Big East between Providence and Villanova. Syracuse, they're nowhere to be found. They did not have good years. They did not make the tournament. So yeah, I think it's true that we are working our way towards a Power Four situation, not just in football, but in basketball as well.
When's the last time you thought of Seton Hall, for example?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
It's going to be trouble for all these schools. Guys, watch out for this Tom Izzo coach team. Besides Duke, who I think is just head and shoulders above everybody else right now, besides Duke, the fact that that Izzo team, which really played like crap in the first half against New Mexico, and then came back, played the right kind of Izzo defense in the second half, and their star player, Jace Richardson, did not score until like 2 minutes left in the game and had a total of 3 points. When that team can play that well without their star player even contributing, look out, because he scores 18 points for them a game. I think Michigan State and Izzo, I do think they'll beat Mississippi, get into the Elite Eight, and I just would not want to go up against a Tom Izzo coach team for the rest of this tournament.
I think they beat Auburn and get to the Final Four.
Yeah,
real
that's
shot.
Where I've got them. That's where I've got them.
As you know, I have Michigan coming out. I don't know. There's something about the way Michigan's playing. They're on a little destiny now, the way they've run through the Big Ten.
I think Auburn's got too much depth. They'll wear them out in the second half, just like they did in the second game when they were struggling.
And Milk, I'll just say that
it's not Michigan.
You had a good guy there at the bar. He's a good guy because he is a very, very bad man. That man is a bad man on the basketball court. He definitely will be very, very good at the next level because it's all about creating your own shot. And that guy knows how to find his own shot on the floor and hit it in clutch situations. I was surprised that Florida's big men did not play as well as they could have. if you're going to go further, Milk, the big men are going to have to show up too.
I thought they played like one of their worst games. They have such a size advantage. And I mean, that UConn had to have out-rebounded them. I don't know the final stats. And I've never seen a performance like that for them this season at the free throw line. I mean,
was painful.
62% or something like that. I think they're
usually, they sure had enough attempts.
Right. And could not make them. And they, you know what? I will say this
about refs Florida. Called 19 fouls against UConn. Were they SEC refs? I haven't checked.
Here we go.
Wow. Here it comes.
What concerned me about Florida in this game, and I hadn't seen this all year, is they looked a little, when it got close, they looked a little timid. They looked a little kind of caught up in the moment. They looked nervous. Some of the bricks that they were throwing from the free throw line, I didn't like that. So I don't know. We'll see what happens, but I'm a little concerned, except for Clayton. He's going to make it.
In the top half of the brackets, you've got 1 versus 4. That's the premier matchup you could hope for in the top half of the bracket, right? You've got that in 3 out of 4 regions. And in the fourth, you've got a 1 versus 5. We do have 1-2 versus 3, Tennessee, Kentucky. So, I mean, it's 2-6, 2-6, and a 10-3. So you're going to get some good games, right? We should have some darn good games.
Have some good games.
Next weekend.
I mean, it's like the SEC Big 10, Big 12 challenge. Throw it up, see what happens.
Rooster's wet dream.
Milk, your guard, Hawkins, reminds me of UConn's guard from the last championship, Jordan Hawkins, who now plays for the Pelicans, I think. He reminds me of him. He's got just a gorgeous shot, gets open easily. And I think he even has a better game going to the hoop than Hawkins did. And Hawkins was drafted in the first round. So I think that guy's got a hell of a future.
Who are you talking about?
Clayton.
Yeah, okay.
He reminds me of Jordan Hawkins.
Yeah.
Same kind of game, but maybe even better.
I like the Steph comparisons.
Well, look, I mean,
Steph, no doubt.
If you want the real Steph comparison from this tournament, I mean, people are talking about the Steph comparison, but the best Steph comparison from this tournament so far has been Duke's guard Tyrese Proctor, who actually set a record. He is 13 of 16 from three, the first player in NCAA tournament history to make more, at least 6 threes in 2 consecutive games. The guy is lights out. He's only missed 3 shots from beyond the arc right now. Duke is winning by 33.5 points. They're scoring 1.5 points per possession. It's like every time they touch the ball, they score. So, yeah. I mean, we can talk about Big Ten SEC tournament, sure, but at the end of the day, it's who's going to beat Duke, I think, for right now.
I agree.
If Duke runs through this tournament the way that they do, and let's not even take them all the way through. If they run through next weekend the way they just did, there are going to be business school classes taught on change management of how they went from Coach K to Shire, right? I mean, the right way to develop your next leader and bring him or her in. They had a plan, and however they executed it, there will be business school classes taught on that, depending on how this shakes out.
I told you guys, I saw Coach K speak recently. He talked about that plan, and he said they worked on it for 2 or 3 years before he retired. It was planned out that far in advance, and he juxtaposed that with the shit show that Tony Bennett left for University of Virginia. So, yeah, it was a great plan. Did you guys see during the Duke game the story about Cooper Flagg's high school team? He left his public school in Florida and went to this Montford school, and on his team was a young Liam McNeely, who's the star freshman for UConn.
Yeah.
And one other guy in the tournament who's killing it. I can't remember who it was, but man, that must have been a hell of a
it's right basketball. From Baylor, isn't it?
Yes.
I know that McNeely scored a whole bunch of points at the end, but I have to say that McNeely's failure to pull in 2 rebounds off free throws might have ended that game for UConn. I'm not saying that all the fault lies with him, but those were 2 critical rebounds that fell right into his hands. He couldn't grab onto either one, which I kind of felt bad for the kid.
UConn has relied on solo ball for most of the year to sort of be a consistent scorer, and he didn't do anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, Robert Wright is who it was, I think, is the third player, right? So, yeah, that was a wild story. All right, well, what do we got? What are we looking forward to next weekend? We want to give our predictions on the Final Four?
Yeah. Well, you mean our revised predictions?
Yeah.
From what?
I have to make one change.
I still have all mine left, so I'll stick with them.
Sure I do. Damn it.
I mean, I think I'm in good shape. I think there was one bracket where I said last week on the pod, with apologies to Milk, I did think St. John's was going to take out Florida. And so obviously that's not happening. But I think everything else is still in play for me.
That would be? Yeah.
Well, I had Duke, I had St. John's, and I had Auburn, and then I had Tennessee.
I got Michigan, Florida, and Duke, Tennessee.
I had Michigan State coming out of the South, St. John's out of the West. I'm going to revise that and say Arkansas.
Wow.
Whoa, what?
What? Whoa. No, I'm just,
right there. And then I said Duke and Tennessee.
Holy shit.
Michigan State, Florida, Duke, and Houston. So.
Yeah, we haven't even talked about Houston.
No. Milk, what do you got?
Really, if Duke gets past Arizona, which we all think it will happen, that next game I've got against, because I think Bama is going to beat BYU. I want to see the Duke-Bama matchup. Oh. That will be outstanding. I've got Duke coming out of that bracket. I've got Tennessee. I think Tennessee is going to beat Kentucky, and I think they're going to beat Houston. Actually, I don't even know if Houston can beat Purdue. We can come back to that. So I'll take Tennessee. I really like Auburn, but you know what? I think I'm not going against an Izzo team. Give me Michigan State and obviously the Gators. So,
all right.
Obviously.
All right, there you go. All right, guys, anything else on hoops?
Nope.
I need Milk's next picks on music. We've been waiting for a week. Our audience has been waiting for a week.
Let's do it. Let's go to the March Madness. The March Madness everybody's been waiting for. It's our music madness. So we had to have a couple tiebreakers by Milk here. And
I'm shocked that some of these required tiebreakers.
Me too.
So how do we want to, let's see, how do we want to do this? Do we want to have Milk just, I think you should just, you should go ahead and call out who you
give
put
me the
through.
Matchup.
Give me all the right, I'll give you the matchup. These are the ties that were 2-2, and then it came down to Milk's vote. All right, so the first one that we had was the 4-seed LL Cool J taking on perhaps underseeded 13 NWA. Milk, who'd you push through?
This is so obvious. Like, the fact I told Nace when I gave this pick, I can't believe that this was a divided group. It's NWA. Like, it's not even a...
Of course it is.
Like, what? Who took LL Cool J again? Pope?
I think there was a little loyalty, a little show loyalty going on there. All right, so we got NWA. We'll be squaring off against Wu-Tang. We'll come back to that shortly. All right, then the other side of the bracket, we had a 2-2 tie between the 5-seed Queen and the 12-seed always dangerous AC/DC. Would you push through, Milk?
I mean, Thunderstruck's my favorite song ever, AC/DC. Come on.
Oh, my God.
Yes! Right.
Like, not even.
All right, you're 1-for-2. That's all right.
Okay.
All right.
This is getting interesting.
We're going to hold on one in that bracket for a minute. We're going to go down to the alternative bracket where we had another 5-12 matchup, Killers versus Green Day.
I don't even know who the Killers are, Green Day.
Wow.
There you go.
Wow.
Mr.
Okay.
Brightside, the song they probably play at the Swamp all the time. You don't even know the fuck that is.
It's one of their two songs. You can't miss it.
Right. I feel like Green Day is more, they've got a bigger slot.
Yes. All right. So then we've got Radiohead versus The Cure, an 8-9 matchup.
This one. And what really
Milk called this one a pick 'em.
It could go either way, but guys, I went with Radiohead.
Oh, thank God.
We're talking.
There you go. The Talking Heads are not there in place of The Cure. Just
although
crazy,
I will
crazy.
Say, Reaper's favorite song is Friday, I'm in Love by The Cure. Little known fact.
And now the one that everybody's been waiting on. This is the 8-9 Fleetwood Mac versus Coldplay. Will Coldplay move on, breaking Rooster's heart?
Come on, Milk.
And his spine. Go ahead, Milk. Who did you push through
here?
Put
a stake in him.
Man, card. It's on the line there, buddy.
Fix you. Give me Coldplay.
Woo!
Let's go. I will call you back tonight now. I will.
Rooster.
I will call you back tonight now.
Oh, my God.
That's all right, Rooster. They're going to be eliminated immediately.
Clay.
Oh. No, not so fast, my friends.
All right. Oh,
okay.
Let's start in the rap bracket. We've got number one versus number eight, Jay-Z versus Dr. Dre. I think we might have an upset here.
I love Dre, but I can't do that to Jay-Z. H to the Izzo, I'm still sticking with Jay-Z.
I'm going with Dre. 1-1.
Dre all the way.
Dre.
Jay-Z.
Oh.
Wow.
Wow.
3-2.
Wow.
The
number one.
All right.
Number one seed.
Wow.
Not even advancing to the Sweet 16.
The 12-13 in an upset bracket here. Wu-Tang, the 12 seed versus number 13, NWA. I mean, Wu-Tang forever, but I'm pushing NWA through on this one.
Yep. I'm with
I'm with Wu-Tang.
NWA all the way.
NWA.
All right.
Wow. Wow.
NWA.
All right. Wow. Okay. There you go. All right. Let's go down to six, the 3-6, number 3 seed Eminem taking on the 6 seed Run DMC.
Yeah. I mean, this is the origins of rap. It's Run DMC. Yeah.
It's got to be, right?
I love the OGs, but man, Eminem is pretty damn good. Tough one. That's a tough one. That's a toss up.
I'm going Eminem.
Oh, so
Rooster, it's down to you.
You got to call it.
I'm going Eminem.
Yes! Wow. That is DMC eliminated. That's an upset.
This is disgusting.
This is a tough one, too. We got here. Maybe we'll get another culture lesson here from Rooster on this one, but we've got Public Enemy. The 15 seed versus the 10 seed Beastie Boys. Got
to go with Public Enemy.
Yeah, as tempting as it is to have a white-on-white crime in the regional semis between the Beasties and Eminem, I got to go with – that would be one hell of a matchup. I'm still going to go with Public Enemy. Yeah, boy!
No, I would take the Beasties over Eminem.
I'm trying to keep this interesting. Beastie Boys, and I, so that Milk has to make the call. I want to put the pressure on Milk here.
No, this isn't fair because I really.
Oh
like
my God.
This is.
Come on, Milk. Do it.
Beastie Boys.
Oh my God.
Wow. What an upset.
Rooster Milk
fire right
generational thing.
Milk put block comes through again.
Moving down to the metal hairband bracket, we've got the number one Motley Crue versus the 9 seed Judas Priest. It's got to be the Crue, doesn't it?
I'm going Judas Priest.
I'm going with Motley.
Motley Crue won.
I'm still protesting. How did you knock Def Leppard out with Judas Priest?
Well, I mean,
it's over. It's all over.
What the present?
Black Sabbath versus Van Halen.
Black Sabbath.
I'm going with Van Halen.
Van Halen.
I'm taking Black Sabbath. Hope.
Man, I have seen them both multiple times. Sabbath is just with Ozzy especially, but oh man. Van Halen, just from a super band standpoint. I'll go with Van Halen.
Hagar or David Lee Roth?
David Lee Roth.
David Lee Roth.
Sammy Hagar sucks.
He does.
All right. So we got Megadeth, the 6 seed versus the 3 seed Bon Jovi.
It's Megadeth for me.
Bon Jovi.
Megadeth.
And I'm sending Bon Jovi through.
Wow. It's not even, oh my God.
Yes.
Do we even have to talk about the next one?
We don't even have to talk about the next
Let's
one.
Let's just put
Metallica through. Yeah, don't even mention that other band.
Round and round.
All right. So we got to go over now to the rock region. Beatles versus Coldplay.
Oh my God. Milk, don't even go there.
I'm still upset with Yoko. I'm going with Coldplay.
Oh my God.
Oh, come on. Beatles.
Beatles.
Got to be the Beatles.
Thank you.
Thank God I didn't have to pick against Coldplay.
That's my guy.
AC/DC, the 12 seed versus the 4 seed.
Another one.
Led
Do we even need to talk about this? Led Zeppelin has more good songs on Physical Graffiti than AC/DC has songs.
Zeppelin Beatles is a Titanic Sweet 16 match.
Yep.
We've got the 16 U2 versus the 3 seed Springsteen. Springsteen, I'm not even sure who Springsteen beat in the first round. It looks like that 14 box was empty. didn't really matter anyway.
They beat the play-in.
Oh yeah, we put in like three different names.
Yeah, it didn't matter,
including Bad Company.
I think Milk put in Carly Rae Jepsen there, but
yeah, that's it.
It was the outfield.
We had Bad Company, Lynyrd Skynyrd, and somebody else.
Outfield.
Oh yeah, that's right.
One of the greatest of albums of all time. One of the greatest bands of all time, going on 45 years consecutively. They're both the Boss in a lot of ways, but we're talking about the Boss band other than Beatles, The Who, Rolling Stones. It's got to be U2 for me. I got to stay with my boys from Dublin.
I suck at that. Not even a question. Me too.
I'm going to Spain next in June to see Springsteen for two shows. I can't vote against Springsteen.
We need more Springsteen in the world right now. I'm going Bruce. Yeah.
Oh my God.
I used to love, I'm probably protesting the rest of this entire bracket.
Oh, this haven't held up over time. Outrageous.
Now you know how I felt about Def Leppard.
This is an immigrant protested by me.
Immigrants versus a true USA guy. We know that who's winning that right now. So see ya. All right. Hendrix versus the Stones. Ooh, that's a tough one.
Stones.
Mm. Stones for me.
Yeah, it's Stones for me.
There it is.
All right. I think so.
All right. I tell you what, the Sweet 16 matchups there.
Well, there's your winner coming through there.
Beatles and Zep, Bruce and Stones.
Is the Grateful Dead on here anywhere? No.
They lost to Springsteen.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Let's go to the alt rock region. Nirvana versus Radiohead, who squeaked by. I mean,
this is a phenomenal round of 32. By the way, I'm going Radiohead.
Nirvana.
It's got to be Nirvana.
Nirvana's
all right. This is a good one right here. Green Day versus the Chili Peppers. Let me tell you, Green Day, a little underappreciated. I saw them last year. Every song they played, you could sing along to.
No, they're a good band, but the Chili Peppers are better.
Peppers are so superior. It's
crazy. They're Red Hot.
Yeah, well, I'm taking the Chili Peppers too, but don't. All right.
They advanced on day one.
All right, well, this is a silly one. R.E.M. versus the Foo Fighters.
Why is that silly? R.E.M.
Yeah, I think I'm going with R.E.M. too.
I think this is a generational one.
Yeah.
Wait, you were
going to
pick Foo Fighters?
R.E.M. is awesome.
First of all, I really think Foo.
Yes.
Who's going out?
I vote for the Foo.
That was advanced.
Way to go.
R.E.M. going through.
Yes. Wow.
Rooster, you're on the same side as House and Milk. Is it your pick? I'm just saying.
I'm good with it.
All right, next, our last pick for the week.
We don't have to even talk about this one.
I hope not.
Yeah, Pearl Jam.
Pearl Jam and a Walk. Fans. Right. Pearl Jam and a Walk.
At least we're spared PJ and the Foo. That'd be it.
That'd be tough for me.
All
right. Well, there you go.
No, Sweet 16 is great. Sweet 16 is very good. Other than leaving out U2 and Coldplay, it's great.
I want our listeners to weigh in.
I don't know if we can post this somehow, but we'll try and figure that out. So, March Music Madness for this week. So, let us know what you think of that. It's the best week of the year with the best day of the year coming up. It's MLB opening week, Thursday's opening day. The Dodgers are 2-0, just going into we're just spotting them two wins just because, you know, why not? Let's just give them two wins anyway to start the year off. So we got opening day on a Thursday, kind of a little bit off from us. So we decided that we're going to split it up. We're going to do a little bit of an AL preview today. We'll talk NL next week. Rooster, let's get us started with the East.
All right, I'm going to throw a curveball at you, fellas. I know you think I'm going to pick the Yankees to win the East. I don't think they're going to. I'm not sure they're even going to come in second in the East this year with the injury bug that's hit them.
Wow.
They banked on some old people getting well or staying healthy. They thought that LeMahieu would get well after two seasons of being constantly hurt, and now they don't have a third baseman. They thought that Stanton had a great World Series and playoffs and that he'd keep that up, forgetting the fact that he's been hurt every year since they've had him, and he's out indefinitely with double wrist injuries. And of course they lost Garrett Cole for the year to Tommy John surgery. So even though they picked up Goldschmidt and Bellinger and a great closer in Devin Williams, And they got Max Fried in the starting rotation. I think most new pitchers who join the Yankees take a year to settle down and get used to playing under the bright hot lights of New York. I think the Yankees are in jeopardy of being third place in the East this year.
Wow.
Because of the injuries. My gut tells me that the Red Sox of late, a history of going from first to last to first to last a lot of times. The Red Sox could make a move this year. They have an elite prospect, a guy named Christian Campbell, who's going to come in and start at second base. They picked up Garrett Crockett as their ace from the White Sox in the starting rotation. They've got Walker Buehler, former ace of the Dodgers, in their starting rotation. And they have some pop in the lineup. They've got that guy, Yoshida, playing outfield or DHing, who had that giant hit in the International World Games, whatever they were called. What was that called? Yeah, the
World Baseball
he had
Classic.
The big hit from Japan in the World Baseball Classic. Yeah. He's a good hitter. They've still got Rafael Devers, who's a good hitter. They picked up Alex Bregman. Great leadership on that team. And Trevor Story is looking to make a big comeback. So I know this is not what the experts are saying. I think the Red Sox might take the East this year. Orioles second, Yankees third. And then I got the Rays and Toronto duking it out for last place. I don't
Neither
even
of them
know.
Are shabby.
I don't even know some of these players on the Rays, Milk. I mean, I've never even heard of half of these guys.
It's going to be interesting that you brought up Christian Campbell for the Sox as a young guy. I was going to talk about him a little later, but I'll mention him. Where's he going to play in that lineup?
Second base, I think. And they'll put Bregman maybe at third or the outfield.
Interesting. We'll have to see, because I thought Bregman was going to be playing second. So we'll have to see how that shakes out there. I mean, this guy's too good. They're going to find a spot for him. Campbell can play outfield too. Be interesting to see what they do with him. So.
Oh, I forgot to mention, they picked up Liam Hendricks as their closer and Aroldis Chapman, who seems to be having a resurgence in his career. That's some heat coming out of the bullpen late in the game. Those two guys.
Yeah. Chapman, talk about the Kevin Bacon of Immaculate Grid, right? If you ever need a pick, Chapman's always a solid.
That is a good one. I forgot about him. I'm glad you mentioned that. Yeah. He's pitched for everyone.
Yeah.
Still throws over 100.
Milk the Rays.
St. Petersburg Rays.
St. Petersburg Rays.
Orlando?
Where are they playing?
We're playing in the Yankee Stadium.
Oh, my God.
In the minor league stadium.
Are all those like things about the Yankees going to be like up around the stadium?
I don't know. Awful. Some of it is
the house that George Steinbrenner built.
You can't remove it.
Are you in a better spot than the A's because you have no choice to play in that stadium, or would you rather elect it to play in a minor league stadium like the A's are going to do this year?
I don't know, man. It's just a nightmare.
Milk, can you tell me who your starting third baseman will be this year?
Starting third baseman?
Yeah.
Is it?
That's what I say. You don't even have these players.
I don't even know right now.
So when you go to a Rays game, do you get like – do you get the ice cream in a Yankees helmet? Like, how does that work?
I'm dead serious. Like, these are discussions taking place right now amongst my friends. Like, what is this going to? Are they going? It literally says Yankees. It's built into the stadium all the way around. I don't know what they're going to. Are they going to, like, cover it up? What happens when we play the Yankees?
Do you have to go over to the locker room when the Yankees come to town?
No. But what happens the next year?
The chances of your kids being Rays fans after this year are pretty slim.
Well, we're in a huge fight. Everyone hates the owner. MLB wants him to sell the team, we think. There were supposed to be some buyers. Haven't heard anything. Our current stadium in St. Pete doesn't have a roof. They want to put $60 million or $600 million to repair that. That sounds like a stupid move. It's a disaster.
Who picked up Randy Arozarena?
He got traded last year to Seattle.
Is he with Seattle?
Yeah, it's going to be a good team.
Yeah.
Seattle's going to be fun to watch, actually.
Yeah.
All right. So let's go ahead then and move over to the Central. House, are you on the Central?
I don't know anything about the Central other than that the Twins normally make the playoffs and then lose the first week of the playoffs. That's about, we can pretty much lock that up. No, I don't do the Junior League.
Oh.
Oh, he's not doing the. The Tigers looked pretty good in the playoffs last year. I would pick the Tigers to win that.
The Tigers did look good in the playoffs. That was actually a good baseball story last year. Are they who's favored this year in that division?
I don't know, but that's who I would pick.
We know it's not going to be the White Sox, who could be historically bad again.
Yep.
They've made no moves. But I guess it comes down to the Guardians, Tigers, and Twins. I don't know that the Royals have really made any moves of any kind. So just from what I recall last year, I can't say that I'm knowledgeable enough about the AL Central to say anything based on offseason moves there.
Will the White Sox win more than 10 games?
That would be so great.
Jesus.
Detroit, I think, picked up some good players. They got Gleyber Torres. They brought in Jack Flaherty, who was with the Dodgers last year.
Yeah, he was good.
Let's see, who else? I thought they had some other good pickups.
They already had a Cy Young candidate.
For what it's worth, in Vegas, Guardians are plus 2,500 to win the World Series as the top team from the AL Central. And then you've got both the Tigers and Twins at plus 3,000. So I think Vegas doesn't see the Tigers and Twins that far behind the Guardians, but they see the Guardians to be, at least Vegas sees them as the top. By the way, just so you understand, I know we're going to talk about National League next week. The Dodgers are plus 275 to win the World Series, and the next closest team is the Braves at plus 800.
But look at the next one, the Yankees at plus 850. I don't think the Yankees are going to sniff the World Series this year.
Vegas doesn't think anybody is going to beat them.
Well, listen, one other thing on the AL Central is Bobby Witt Jr. I mean, probably one of the most exciting players in baseball. Yes. And if the Royals can do anything around him, keep an eye on that. I mean, he had an MVP season, and in any other year would have been the AL MVP. Unfortunately, he was trying to fend off, what's his name, your guy?
Judge.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, Bobby Witt Jr. is a superstar, a young guy, and just a lot of fun to watch. So that might be the best player to keep an eye on in the Central this year. But yeah, I mean, the Central just never really does it for me. I don't know.
What you didn't talk about when you talked about the Yankees and the AL East was, of course, Soto's departure. And
I've already erased his name from my memory.
Yeah. So the question is, do you think, or do Yankees fans think, that Bellinger and Goldschmidt can together fill the void that's left by Soto?
No.
Yeah.
I think Bellinger's kind of at the downside of his career. You know, neither one of them were ever as good as Soto, but and combined, I don't even think they're going to fill that void. And then, of course, you have another hole there with Giancarlo Stanton gone for a long time. I mean, we're going to struggle to score runs, I think. We also have Luis Gil out injured. So our pitching staff is going to be Rodon and Max Fried, and then hope that Stroman is good again, which he wasn't last year. Clark Schmidt, they didn't even put him on the roster for the World Series. And he's their, you know, third pitcher.
Well, do we want to move over to the West?
Well, Pope had to leave. So.
Yeah. So I think the team that you want to watch in the West that's going to be a lot of fun is the Seattle Mariners. Yep. We started talking about it.
Yeah.
The center fielder, Julio Rodriguez, is going to be a favorite to be the MVP this year. And then you add in, I'm kind of curious to see, Victor Robles is a guy who the Nats brought up. And Robles, had he not hyperextended his elbow, that's how Soto got in at such a young age to play for the Nats. But Robles was looked at as the five-tool guy that the Nats had. He never really did much, kind of a perennial disappointment. As soon as he got over the Mariners, he went on a tear. So I'm curious to see what Robles does. Great, great defensive player. And it looks like maybe they saw something in his approach to hitting that turned him around. And then you got your guy, Mil Arizarena, and a fairly good rotation. So
the rotation is hurt by the fact that Kirby, who's probably their one or two, is out with a shoulder problem. And that's not a good sign to start the season. So I think the question on the Mariners is going to be their pitching. Does their pitching hold up?
Yeah.
But I think offensively, they're the ones to beat.
Yeah, that's right. And then, you know, the Astros, everybody's talking about the demise of the Astros. Like, it's, you know, it's over for them. This lineup isn't so bad. Altuve, Isaac Paredes at third, Yordan Alvarez DHing, Christian Walker at first base, Diaz catching. I mean, that's not terrible.
And good pitching,
Valdez and pretty good pitching. Yeah, I mean, and by the way, they've got Josh Hader as their closer. So we'll see what he's got left in the tank at this point. But I don't know. Maybe the demise of the Astros might be a little premature.
Good pitching wins a lot of games for you. We were talking about the Tigers and we couldn't remember their staff. You say they picked up Flaherty from the Dodgers in their starting rotation. He joins Tarek Skubal, who had an incredible ERA last year and was maybe a runner up for Cy Young.
He took the Cy.
Oh, did he? Cy Young.
Yeah.
And Blake Snell is on that staff. That's a pretty good threesome.
Yeah. So what else we got in the West? Well, we won't talk about the Angel. Oh, the Rangers. I guess the question there with the Rangers is, what does DeGrom look like, right? Isn't DeGrom coming back? Can he be healthy? And what does he look like if he is healthy?
Do they still have Chris Sale? They have the other guy who pitched for the Red Sox.
Eovaldi.
He's of the Rangers. Yep. So we'll see what he looks like.
Yeah, they have both the Vanderbilt guys. They have both Leiter and Kumar Rocker.
I'd like to Rangers see those guys do well.
Well, and that was going to be another one of the rookies that I suggest you keep an eye on is Rocker. That's a guy who had some health issues his first year and now seems to be back. It's going to be really a fun year to see what he can do, because coming out of when he was drafted, he was a pretty high prospect, not a Paul Skeens level prospect, but right there. Well,
remember the Mets drafted him and then revoked the offer.
It'll be interesting to see what he can do. Right. Because of the physical, right?
Right.
Something
right.
like that. Isn't that what
yeah.
happened?
Yeah. He and Leiter were lights out at Vanderbilt, and something must have happened to his arm last year. I'm rooting for him to have a great career. Same with Leiter. I like Leiter too.
Let's not forget that the Rangers have a lineup that includes Seager and Semien and Josh Jung and Wyatt Langford and Evan Carter. Like, they've got a pretty solid lineup. I think the Rangers make it back out of that division.
By the way, nobody talks about Wyatt Langford enough. That guy was a rookie last year from Florida.
Amazing.
And literally first year.
Yep.
Right. Yeah, the Rangers, listen, the Rangers are just one season removed from the World Series, right?
Yes, correct.
So, I mean, you could see them making some noise. I don't think we should take up any oxygen on the planet talking about the Angels, except to just note Mike Trout is still pretty good, and hopefully he'll stay healthy and have a full season, but they continue not to have the pieces around him, I don't think.
And your former guy, Rendon, is still relaxing on the bench, injured.
Probably. Yeah, so I don't know. I just don't think there's much there. And then the A's, they're the other AAA ballpark this year, along with the Rays, while they wait to move to Vegas.
Oh yeah, so. Sacramento, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
By the way, back to the Angels real quick. You want to talk about not knowing a team? Go look at their starting lineup. If I'm Mike Trout, holy shit, awful.
Now the A's may have in the American League the best hitting prospect in a little while in the Jacob Wilson, who's their shortstop. Not a big power guy, but he's not going to strike out. He's going to put the ball in play. I don't know if that's cool anymore, or if that's like back in style now that we have big bases and everybody can steal. I think it's a little bit more important than it had been to get guys on base. So that's somebody to keep an eye on, is Jacob Wilson, the A's shortstop. So if you can get one of the 3,000 tickets that they have available to a game, to a home game, it's probably worth going to see him. What else we want to talk about in the American League for this year? Anybody got anything they want to throw out there? I just want to say, there's so much in baseball about stats, right? All the stats and everything. And
he's just got his Yankees mustache on.
I can't even see it. Oh boy.
What were you saying about stats?
For a podcast. No, I was just saying, like, you can look at all these stats. There's so much, so much statistics in baseball. I mean, the cameras they set up around the field to capture the data and everything is unbelievable. The big thing, though, that you can't predict are injuries. If you look at some of the predictions last year, a couple of them were spot on from the predicted wins going into the season versus where teams ended up. But then you look at a team like the Braves. The Braves were predicted to win 95 games. And what did they end up winning last year? They ended up winning 89. Six games, a big difference. But, they had bad injuries. So you can look at all the statistics you want, and by all the statistics, the Dodgers ought to win 120 games this year. But watch out for injuries. That's what you can't account for with all the statistics.
Yeah, right? I mean, I don't know if you heard this story about Mookie Betts having lost all that weight. He got some bad food over in Japan. He's sick as a dog, like really, really sick, has lost a lot of weight. He might be back, but I bet you he's not playing at Mookie level for, you know,
a couple weeks. He's not playing right now. He's lost 25 pounds and can't stop vomiting. And I think he had this before they went on the trip to Japan, and they cannot figure out what it is.
That's a big, big boy in that lineup. Big one.
Yeah. Yeah.
And don't forget Padres looked pretty damn good against them in the NLDS. They were up 2-1 in that series.
Yep.
Padres could take them.
There'll be a lot to talk about in the National League next week. So, all right. Anything else on opening day, opening week?
Play ball.
No. All right. Yeah. Play ball. Who's going to a game? Anybody going to an opening day game?
I hope you are to see the Phillies demolish the Expos.
Yeah, listen, hey, man, we'll talk about the Phillies, but this is their year. It's not that window is getting tighter.
That I agree with.
Tighter. Things are getting start getting a little nervous. Bruce, do we have any other sponsors worth mentioning?
We do. Our buddy Milk here, his company is one of our sponsors for tonight's show. It's Injury Board, which is a premier networking group for plaintiffs' lawyers. And one of the networking features that Injury Board provides are a couple of getaways every year where we all get to talk and meet each other. And I'm proud to say that all of the SMQBs are members of Injury Board, which can be found at injuryboard.org. Milk, tell us about the Pathfinder Retreat.
Yeah, and I'm very proud to have you guys all as members. Pathfinder is our kind of our premier signature event. It's at the end of April 27th to the 29th out in beautiful Oregon in the Willamette Valley.
Damn it.
We'll talk a lot about the future of the legal profession. Tau technology will come into play, AI, all those fun topics. And we've got a great selection of speakers, and you can learn more about it at injuryboard.org.
All right.
Will be a good time.
It's also a group where I've met some of my best friends, so you can't miss out if you're joining that group.
Hey, anybody got a punch?
I do.
Yeah.
I wonder if, did you have one too?
No.
Bison?
Not me. No, not me.
You guys, last week we shared with the audience some about the inaugural race this season of the F1, and this past weekend they were in China, and after the race, three different drivers were disqualified: Lewis Hamilton and Charles Leclerc of Ferrari, and then a Pierre Gasly of Alpine. And my punch goes to the FIA. And look, I know what Bison will say is that rules are rules, and they set what the rules are, and you know what they are. But this is really, really stupid. I mean, really, really stupid, because your car has to be a certain weight, 800 or whatever kilograms when the race is over. And Charles Leclerc and Pierre Gasly were both there, but then it's like the car had to take a piss, like you had to drain out some remaining gas or whatever, and Leclerc was 799.5 and Gasly was 799. Their car actually weighed the right amount at the end until you, like, okay, it's not using gas anymore, like the race is over. This stuff is so stupid. And so, like, I don't think here in the United States we care about it quite as much as around the world. But if you're a Ferrari fan, by the way, Lewis got knocked out because there was a certain measurement that was 8.5 millimeters instead of the requisite 10 millimeters. Milk, other than looking down your pants, like, can you even measure a millimeter and a half? I mean, come on. Like, that is obscene. So was my comment. But the point is this, like, these rules are stupid. If you're going to keep new found people who are fans of the sport, like loving Ferrari, like me, you knocked out two drivers who finished in fourth and fifth place and a lot of points towards the constructor title over super, super extra technicalities. I just feel like there should be some kind of wiggle room, some kind of, I don't know, subjectivity on it, like whether or not it has any material effect. I don't know. I don't know if you guys feel the same. I feel like these rules are stupid when it gets that close, and it's a punch from me.
Listen, I'm going to punch with you because I had two Ferraris picked this week. So it'll be hard to recover from. So I think the rules are stupid this week.
Well, the rules aren't stupid. The application of those rules in these three situations might be stupid.
Right.
But the rules are there because of, there's a long history of cheating in racing, all forms of racing, including NASCAR, where guys would do anything they could to start the race out in compliance with the weight restrictions and then dump some weight during a race through all kinds of illegal means, including, like, back in the bad old days, they would put like BBs or ball bearings in a tube in the car and then release them once the race was underway, and there'd be these little ball bearings bouncing down the track. So they had to do something to prevent the cheating. And unfortunately, I don't think any one of these three guys was cheating. They just got caught up in the
rules. The other thing it shows you, though, is, I mean, these races are decided by, you know, split seconds. I mean, that's particularly right during qualifying. But I mean, you run, what, 150 miles or something on the right? 50 so laps. I think it was a 3 mile track. So a little bit more than 150 miles. And they come down to 3 seconds between first and second place. So, I mean, yeah, the rules, I don't know. It's a millimeter and a half really makes a difference.
Right.
Apparently Hamilton's violation had to do with just the amount of wear on the underside of his car.
Right. Yeah. And supposed then to control you take a measurement. You can't.
All right. Anybody else got a punch? How about a lasso?
I've got one. This has been all over Facebook, but it really is a heartwarming story of JC Ascara, who was drafted by the Mets in 2013 and elected to go to college. He went to FIU for 4 years, and then the Orioles drafted him in 2017 as a catcher. And he bounced around all over the minor leagues since 2017. And then yesterday, I think it was, he met with the Yankees and they called him up for their opening day roster. And he got on and did a videotaped phone call with his mother to tell her. And it really was a heartwarming story. This guy has been a teacher, a Uber driver, everything he can just to make ends meet so he can keep on with the minor leagues and keep his dream alive. And it finally came to fruition this week. And it just goes to show, you know, we talk about all these teams like the Dodgers, the Yankees, the Phillies, and other teams with all this money. There are still some rags to riches players on even those teams that are tremendous stories.
That's awesome. How old is he?
29.
Those stories are good.
He's been around for a long time.
That's a good story.
Yeah.
That's awesome. All right.
Any other lassos?
I have a buzzer. I started at the top with taking the bar, Wyatt Hendrickson. I just want to cover, I know it's not a top sport for lots and lots of our listeners, but we do have some listeners that are interested. And even if you're not interested, I think the domination, the dynasty that has been created at Penn State Wrestling and Cale Sanderson is such a cool story, particularly this year because it was record setting. It's the most team points ever scored by any team in NCAA championship. In the first two rounds, there's 10 different weight classes, and Penn State sent all 10 of its wrestlers to the NCAAs. And the first two rounds, they went 20-0. In the end, they placed 2 firsts, a second, 5 thirds, a fifth, and a seventh. It was a total domination, capped off by the first and only ever 5-time NCAA champion in Carter Storace in just a brutal, brutal weight class at 184. But, you know, I was, again, very fortunate that this year it was in Philadelphia, and there were just a lot of great stories, and there's just so much effort over a long season of cutting weight and making weight and staying in shape and grueling through injuries. And when these guys win it all, even when they don't win it all, when they win that match that makes them an All-American, which is the top 8 places, just to see, like, every single one of these is like watching a lasso happen, because you can see how much training went into that moment when it happens. And congrats to Penn State. They've built a dynasty. I think they've won 13 of the last 14 championships, and it was fun to watch. Congrats to the whole team, Cale Sanderson, Carter Storace, and all of them.
Anybody else got a buzzer beater? Good one. It's a good story.
I've got a buzzer beater. It's actually more of a congratulations. I'd like to congratulate Rooster on signing Jameis Winston to be starting quarterback. And I wish you all the best, buddy. You're going to love him.
I think we dodged a bullet by not signing Aaron Rodgers.
Right.
That could be.
You're going to love Jameis. You're going to love him.
Oh, boy.
You know, I saw an interesting fact about Jameis. that in the 100-year history of the New York Giants, on opening day, they've never had a starting quarterback as a black quarterback in the history of the New York Giants. Of all people, Jameis Winston would be the first black quarterback to start the season for the Giants in their history. I found that kind of like, wow.
I did not know
that. By the way, Jameis claims he's had LASIK surgery, I think, that he was damn near blind every other season, and that this year is going to be different. So just watch out, Milk.
All right, I'm gonna give you a buzzer beater of a guy who missed three straight cuts, found himself three strokes back on the back nine yesterday, and went for three birdies in his last five holes to win. Victor Hovland winning the Valspar yesterday. That's kind of wild, and I don't know if anybody saw, but he had a great post on Instagram or whatever, Twitter or whatever, and it was just stupid game. That was it. That was his post after winning. You missed three cuts in a row, and you're three back on the back nine, and then all of a sudden you birdie three out of five holes to win the damn thing. So that sounds like golf.
By the way, I know JP shot a 66, which is awesome on Sunday, but he shit himself at the end. In my opinion.
So anyway, any other buzzer beaters? I think we're pouring one out tonight, right, Rooster?
Yeah. We lost a giant, literally and figuratively, in the world of professional boxing recently. George Foreman died March 21st. He originally boxed from 1967 to 1987, won a championship during that period of time by knocking out Joe Frazier in 1973. Before that, he had won Olympic gold for the U.S. In 1974, he was involved in one of the most iconic fights in all of boxing history, the Rumble in the Jungle, where he lost to Muhammad Ali. And then 3 years after that, he lost a title fight, I think it was, and retired in 1977, only to come back almost 20 years later in 1994 at the age of 45 years old, came back to be a heavyweight boxer, and the next year won his second world championship with a knockout of Michael Moore at the age of 46. People today know him as a spokesperson on commercials for things like the George Foreman grill, but he was a hell of a fighter and slugger. I mean, that guy, Pat, was huge. He was like 6'6", 290 for part of his career, or 285, and packed a punch, man. You wouldn't want to get hit by him. So anyway, rest in peace, George Foreman.
Yeah, a legend. All right, guys, good show. Lots of stuff happening this week. We'll have lots to talk about. Pay attention to your musical picks. Big week next week for that. So have a good one, guys. See ya.
All right. I'll fix you.